This is HPR episode 2838 entitled, Why Haskell? And is part of the series, Haskell. It is hosted by Tuku Toroto, and is about 32 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Tutorto tries to answer Beaver's question on why would someone want to use Haskell.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, you are listening to Hacker Public Radio and this is Tuturto. When I made an episode about functor and applicative in Haskell, episode 2778, I got comment from a Beaver, which is following. I have been writing software for over 30 years, but I find the syntax of Haskell anything but intuitive. Obviously, I am missing the point, as nobody would design a language with the intention of it being difficult to use. Perhaps you could produce another episode addressing the question, why Haskell? That's a really good question. It's a good idea to be a critical, never take anything at the face value. And this episode is my personal view about the matter. I might be overstating something, I might be missing something, but this is the reasons why I like the why I like learning Haskell. So Haskell is originally an academic research language. It was not the usefulness was not the top priority back then. It was for the research purposes, but it has gotten more and more usage in the mainstream. And the main point for me in the Haskell is that it makes me think differently about the programs I write. There's some features that I will go through a bit later that pretty much forces the programs to be completely different to compared to what I normally write. And I like being out of my comfort zone when I learning new things. And I think that it's not if I'm learning a new language, it doesn't usually make that much sense to learn a new language if it's just almost identical to the previous languages you have known. So Haskell is different. Haskell forces me to think differently about programs. So that's the main things I like about this. But if you want to evaluate a programming language, you shouldn't concentrate on the little parlor tricks or little details. There's three questions you should think of. What are the primitive elements? What are the means of composition? Like, how do you compose those primitive elements? And what are means of abstractions? How do you draw boxes around these compositions to make them usable? These questions were I learned this from the Harold Abelson, who was the co-author of the structure and integration of the computer programs, which is really terrific book and really good video series about the book on the YouTube. So you shouldn't concentrate on the parallel tricks. You shouldn't concentrate on how some short code can do some nifty things. And syntax isn't that important. It is still important, but only to a certain level. So things like, are you using parentheses or not parentheses? I used to code in Lisp, and now I'm coding with the Haskell Lisp pad. At least look like Lisp had tons of parentheses, and Haskell doesn't have pretty much anything. But it's no big difference. Semicolons or no semicolons, meaningful white space or not meaningful white space. Snake case versus camel case in naming. Like, I used to do quite a bit of Python, where they use the snake case. So you have a multi-word names are, the words are separated with underscore. As in the Haskell, they're using camel case, where they are lowercase, but the words start with uppercase. And when I switched from the Python to the Haskell, that's something I totally didn't like at all. But it didn't take that long to get used to it. I don't think of that anymore. It is true that Haskell has some things that make it, on a first glance, quite a bit difficult to read. Like we use a lot of symbols. Like code is littered with dollars, diamonds, dollar diamonds, asterisk diamonds, five diamonds, question mark, dot, greater, equal, which is point symbol, greater, equal, greater, exclamation mark, and whatnot. Like, there's a lots and lots of those. And if you don't know what those are, it's pretty much impossible to read, I would think. And the information density of the Haskell code is very high. There's not that much boilerplate code to write. They are abstracted away. Of course, there's always some, but some things are abstracted away and replaced with smaller constructs. So one theory is that when you have less code to write, then you have less bugs if the complexity of the program is the same. But I don't know if that's true. Primitive elements. So Haskell has usual primitive data types like ints, floats, and so on. Then it has these algebraic data types, boolean, maybe a, either ab, that can be used to express cases where you have an enumeration of different cases, and those enumerations can be parameterized. There are records. These are just collection of fields with types. For example, person could have a person name and person age. This is one part that I don't quite like about the Haskell, is that the records are fields. When you define a record with fields, those field names are used as functions. So when you want to check them, for example, age of the person, it is usually person age, and then the data, and then you get that one value out of the. So, because those are functions, they are not encapsulated in the same way as in the object-oriented programming. You cannot have two functions with identical names in the same namespace. So you either have to keep the records in a separate namespaces so that the fields don't clash, or you have to prefix them. I usually prefix them with the record name. So in person would have a person age, person name, and person occupation fields instead of name, age, and occupation. That's I don't quite like. And then there's functions, and there's a lot of functions. Functions are pure, meaning that they are always data in, data out. They don't mess with anything else. And you cannot change the parameters that are given to you. Like if somebody gives you some record as a parameter, you cannot, inside of the function, change values of that record. They are immutable. So, and this eliminates quite many bugs, in my opinion. At least in C#, I have often run into the case where I'm doing something, I'm using some function or method somebody else wrote, and that forms a long chain of method calls, and then somebody somewhere changes the value of the passed in object for some reason. And then everything seems to work, and then later on when testing, I realize that this doesn't work at all. So, and of course you can have side effects, but these are different thing. Like if you are if you are writing to a disk, for example. These functions are, they have a different kind of type signature. So you don't actually even accidentally call a function that touches a database without you knowing. You can see that clearly from the function signature. And that signature bubbles up. Like if there's a one function that touches a database, then the function that is using that function also have to state that, hey, I'm touching the database, and function that uses that one has to state that, by the way, I'm touching a database. You cannot hide the fact that something is having an effect on the outside world. It's visible all the way to the top. Like I said, data is immutable. So less moving parts, less bugs. I like that. And the another thing is that there is no null. In Haskell, when you cannot have a null value. Nobody is ever going to say that I'm going to pass you a person data and then accidentally hand you a null. That just doesn't happen. There's of course a ways to express in situations where you are handed a data that might or might not be present there. But again, it's explicitly stated that this might or might not have the data you are expecting or going to use. But it's still not null. It's a value. And also the compiler will check the types and tell you that, by the way, this is a type that can have a value or cannot have you. This is a value that might or might not have what you are looking for, so you have to account for that. And there is a undefined though. Undefined is a value that does not exist. So if that's usually not really used in the Haskell, at least I haven't figured out any use for that. There are cases where you might have a function that doesn't always return some sensible value. Then it might return undefined, and then that would cause a runtime exception and the whole thing would halt. For example, head is a good example. It returns you the first element of the list, and it has a type of list of A to A. So if you give it a list of something, it will return something back. Like if you give list of ints, it will return an int for you. But if you give it an empty list, then of course it cannot return the first element of the list. But it doesn't. It says that it returns something. So there's no case for that. So it will crash. So those are called as a, I think, partial is the term. The functions that always return value when given parameters are called total. And functions that have cases, or like edge cases or corner cases, where they cannot return value, are partial. Okay. Means of composition. So algebraic data types can contain other types. So you can have a, for example, you can have a maybe that is an example I often call. Maybe is a this data type that signifies that there can be value or there can be lack of value. So that can be a maybe int, can have values of just int or nothing. So this is a type that has been parameterized with a type int. They can be specific or they can be general. Like you can specify that, for example, in the case of maybe, you can put anything there. Or in case of list, you can put anything in there. Or you can have some special data type that has a, I don't really know. You have a, can't really think of good example right now, but you could have my maybe int that is always parameterized with the int value. So that can only be int or nothing at all. And they can be recursive. So you can, on a type level, you can, for example, define how binary tree is formed. So your tree consists of branches and leaves. And that's kind of nice. Records work in the same way. You can record fields because they can be any type. You can put more records there, or you can put algebraic data types there. And of course, in the algebraic data types, you can put records in. Functions are values. This is a huge thing in functional programming. This is pretty common in object-oriented programming nowadays, meaning that you can pass functions as parameters to other functions, you can return functions from functions, and you can store functions in some data structure. You can have a list of functions, but in Haskell they have to, if you have a list of something, they have to have the same data type, same type. So if you have a list of functions, those functions have to work in the, they have to have the same signature. And you can compose functions with a dot operator. So you, if you have two functions, one is from A to B, so you give type A and it returns type B, and then you have a function that takes B and returns C, you can compose those with a dot operator, making a new function that is from A to C. So you just treat them as a pipes, and the ends of the pipes fit together, so you just snap them together and form a new function. And this is used quite often to take those simpler functions, combining them together, making a larger functions, often on the fly when you need to call something. You don't even have to give these new functions a name, unless you absolutely want them, but usually you don't. And because functions are pure, like it's data in, data out, you know that you can safely combine them. Nobody in the middle is suddenly going to format your hard drive or load data from the database or write to the hard drive or anything like that. Means of abstractions. So functions can apply other functions, like they can call to other functions, and you can use passed in functions as to fill slot in some general algorithm. If you have for example, if you have an algorithm that searches path through a maze, you can abstract out the decision to which direction to go next, and just say that this general routine expects a function that looks like this, and it is used to choose where to go next. And then you can use the general algorithm, and when you are setting things up, you can give it a function, and then you can do breadth first or depth first or beam search or A star with the same general algorithm. You are just replacing the decision making slot there. So, and functions can be, they can be parametric polymorphism. They support parametric polymorphisms. So, the data types support the parametric polymorphisms. So, list of A, maybe A. I talk about that. But you can have cases where you don't want to specify very clearly that this is some specific type, but you also don't want to allow broad types like everything. And here the type classes and type constraints come to play. So you can have a function that expects any type that supports equality. So anything that can be compared with each other. Or you can have a function that expects ordering. So you can see which thing is bigger, or you can and you can have multiple constraints of course. So this allows you to write a pretty general code. If you know that you are doing some calculation, you can say that you are mathematical calculation, you can say that you are expecting values that support, for example, numeric operations, plus minus, multiplication, and so on, and perform your calculations based on that, and that then your function works with anything that has instance of num, meaning that when somebody comes with some new numeric type that has instance of num, your function will automatically work with those correctly. And there are tons and tons of these type classes already in the existence, and some of them are pretty abstract. Like there's a semigroup as a type class, meaning that's something that you can, if you have two elements, you can combine them together. And there's a monoid, which is a semigroup with identity. So you have two elements that you can combine together, producing the same kind of element. And you have a unit element that, when combined with something, doesn't change the end result. And for example, list is an example of this. When you combine two lists, you just combine them. You take one list and then add another list at the end of it. Numbers, integers are one example of this. There's actually two examples for this with now integers. But one is that when you combine them, you plus them together, and then the unit is zero, because zero plus anything is still the same value, or you multiply them, and then the unit is a one, because anything multiplied with one is that original value. And it might sound that pretty abstract. It is abstract and not useful, but that's not true. It's really useful when you figure out what kind of things you can do with that. It starts showing up in the code all the time. So there's lots of these useful abstractions there already in present that you just have to learn and start using. For example, for loops, there are no for loops as in the same sense as in, for example, in C sharp. If you want to take a list of elements and just find out all the, if you have a list of numbers and you want to find all the numbers that have some special property, you use filter to do that. And if you want to manipulate those numbers, you want to multiply them by two, you use math to do that. You don't have to write for loops, but you have this specialized math fault filter that are, at least in the C# there, and in the JavaScript, and I think in the Java there is some equivalent of those two. I haven't been writing Java in long time. So one thing is yes, that it makes code very concise. It makes it very, it states very clearly what you are after. You don't have to think that, okay, here's a loop, and then this is the variable that goes from zero to length of the list minus one, and here's it incremented, and here's what I'm doing with the thing. It's more about stating that I'm going to, if you see math, you know that, hey, this is going to run a function on a structure, each element of the structure producing a new structure. And if you see filter, you just immediately know that, okay, this is going to take some elements out of that structure. So left to right, it states more concisely, more clearly what you are about to do, or what the code is about. But of course, there's more to remember. You have to remember names of those specialized functions. There's some little tidbits that I did not know where to put this. Like, Haskell is a non-strict language, meaning that the values are not evaluated until they are needed or they are explicitly forced. This means that you can, for example, easily define, for example, infinite list and an infinite list of numbers, for example. You can say that this list contains all the numbers, all integers in the universe, starting from the one and ending at the infinity. And you can start operating with that. You can say that, okay, this another list is that all numbers multiplied by 2, and then this is all the numbers that are less than 100. And you can easily manipulate infinite data structures without needing infinite amount of memory and infinite amount of time, because when you define an infinite list, you are only you're only getting the first element of that list, and the rest of the list has not been calculated. When you touch the second element, that one is calculated, but rest is the, like, it is there, but it hasn't been calculated. It is just a hunk or promise that it will be there if you request that. Of course, you have to remember that you are dealing with infinite things if you are doing this, and don't for example try to get the length of the list, because you will run out of time or memory, probably memory. And this also means that the recursion doesn't blow the stack. It might lead into, in some cases, it might lead into big memory usage if you're not careful, if you do things that aren't sensible. And here's a thing that sometimes it's hard to reason about the performance or memory impact of a program, because everything is, almost everything, you can mark things that whenever this is encountered, force the value of it immediately, but almost everything is non-strict, so it's a bit hard to sometimes think about what the program is actually doing. But on the other hand, in a Haskell, the programs tend to be more about what something is, not how some algorithm is implemented. Like, they are so short, and they are so to the point and with high abstraction that they, at least to me, it is more about, when I'm writing Haskell, it's more about describing what something is instead of how something is calculated. Like I said, the functions are pure. The signatures will explicitly tell you what is going on. There won't be a nasty surprises down the line. Or rather, there will be less nasty surprises down the line. Of course, if you have a function that isn't total, but might not have a value for some combination of parameters, that cannot be expressed in the type level, in the type signature. You either have to know that, or you have to find out in a hard way. There's a type inference, like in the compiler can tell you, when you had a compiler a working Haskell program without types, it will figure out those types by itself. Usually. Sometimes it does not work. Sometimes it needs help. But, for example, inside of a function, you usually don't have to specify types. It is a good habit of specifying types at the top level, like tell what signature of every function is, because it makes finding errors a lot easier. The compiler is really helpful. Like, if you miss a case in a case expression, it will tell you that your case expression doesn't handle this particular case, so please add it there. it's a warning though. It's not an error unless you explicitly to make it an error. Same thing with the similar thing with the imports. If you import a couple functions from a module and then you try to use some another function from that imported module, you get a compilation error, and the compiler will actually say that, hey, by the way, did you mean this one? This looks like what you might have been after. There's a carrying and partial application, meaning that this didn't sound a big thing to me, but it's a huge thing in functional programming. It's a if you call a function of two parameters with a one parameter, you don't actually get a error. You get a new function back. You get back a function that expects one function and that works identical to the original function if the original function had the first value bind or fixed to the value you supplied. And I use this all the time. It makes writing code really pleasant. There's tons of libraries, and some of them have really high level of abstraction, meaning that they are a bit hard to get into. Like I often think when looking at some library, what in earth could I use this for? Because it's just so high level, and then I have to go hunting for examples to realize that what's the actual use case. But when I get to understand what the problem the library tries to solve, then it's easier sailing from there on. Okay, so I probably over-emphasized something or missed something. But the main thing for me is when writing Haskell that it's different language from what I have learned before, and it teaches me something new about programming. That's the reason I'm learning it. It's really great and elegant and interesting language, but those are secondary to me. So, if you had any questions, comments, or own views, please let me know. You can reach me by email, or you can reach me at the Fediverse, where I'm tuturto@mastodon.social, or even better, you can record your own episode and submit it to the Hacker Public Radio. Okay. This is Turto. Thanks for listening. Ad Astra.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.